This is the Lean Into Art Cast.
Whether it's illustration, cartooning, UI design, or presenting, it all comes down to telling your story, communicating your ideas. But it ain't for the faint of heart. But let's lean into it.
On we sweep with threshing oar. Our only goal is the Western Shore.
The Iron Maiden?
No.
Oh.
It's the, if I would have started screaming, I think you might have known what it is.
I still wouldn't. Rob, you forget. I don't know anything about music.
It's the immigrant song by Led Zeppelin.
Oh, yeah. See? I don't know anything about Led Zeppelin. I know the name. I know that.
Yeah, I'm not a Led Zeppelin,
I don't say this, Rob, to like say like, oh, you're making me feel bad because of my lack of knowledge of music. It's just that this is one of the things that makes me really like bad at parties is when people start. And as a matter of fact, I just hung out with some social friends who are in the library field, not cartoonists. And it turned into this fun party game of them throwing names of musicians at me and watching my face just sit there blinking. And I became the freak show of the get together. It was like, I don't know. They mentioned some name sounded like a Latin name. I'm like, oh, like she's a really popular singer. I'm like, I don't know.
That's funny. Hey, it's like you bringing up movies to me. Have you seen fill in the blank? No. Almost universally.
So you've never seen The Wizard of Speed and Time?
Not yet. I have the links. It's on YouTube, I know. And I'm really excited to see it because I know the... what's funny is I remember all the meta info about the things that I need to see, but then, you know, there's a very tiny list that I actually do squeeze in to go see. That's the one that's kind of like Pee Wee Herman's Big Adventure, Big Adventure. And
good memory. Good memory.
I way got to see it.
Yeah. I think you'll be able to relate a lot to the main character, Mike Jitlove. Mm. I think you'll really identify with him. I could be wrong, but anyway. What's the big idea there? Lots of people know lots of different things, and we shouldn't throw that around.
Watch where you're throwing that knowledge, pal.
Right. And on the other hand, my attitude is always like, oh, you don't know about it? Well, let me tell you about it because I'm really excited about it, right? But then there's also a time and place for that because I also found out from hanging out with normal people who don't make cartoons or comics that when somebody brings up Voltron, In that kind of company, that's not the time for me to go into my theories on writing stories for children and interpreting stories in the spirit they were intended and ways to interpret like the opening sequence with Peter Cullen's narrative saying these weird larger than life things. It's time for me to just go, yeah, that show was cool. Because then I watched their eyes glaze over as I was sitting there expounding and pontificating about my theories of children's storytelling. Yeah, watch where you throw that stuff, man.
Exactly.
What's going on in your life? You've been doing some Art Geek Zoo stuff again.
I have been trickling out updates to essentially it was my 24-hour comic, and it's called Pick and Crunchy Separate Days. And I'm slowly updating that still. And I held off on the recent update because I was actually in the middle of moving, right? It's sort of like, well, are you going to get a new couch and still be in your old house? Or are you going to wait till you move to the new house before you get the couch in there and stuff? And,
God, that's awful, isn't it? It's such a chicken or egg thing sometimes with these blasted digital content publishing things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, especially because there's a pile of experiments going on all at once. And, I'm just that kind of mad scientist. Thankfully, I keep track of it all because that, in particular, that comic, I was playing around with doing an infinite scroll, which has been kind of fun and interesting because I hadn't done it before. And I guess I just like doing that. And hopefully the readers of any readers who stick around at Art Geek Zoo are probably always curious what I'm going to do next because I constantly change stuff as far as art style and which I think it's going to totally go into our topic today also. But, because of my interest in programming and experimenting with that, where I had built Comicaster, which was where I was hosting Art Geek Zoo, on a CMS that runs on Google App Engine, but am a little bit not pleased with how that's been going. So I decided to move. You know, sometimes you move to a neighborhood and you settle in, you really love it. And it's like, wow, so many things are in really good walking distance. And other times you're like, well, why are they charging me for all these different things that they weren't charging me for? And I just obviously mixed my metaphors. Anyway, so yeah, to see the experiment in action, I've moved it, all the episodes from where they were to this new place, but the move's still in progress. So there's boxes here and there, maybe an empty pizza container. Watch your step. And it's at agz.me. And it's now hosted on Squarespace.
Sweet. Yeah, you know, I want to hang on to that metaphor you made of the, like, waiting to buy the new couch until after you're fully moved in, or, you know, being, like, in this kind of, like, that chaos state of moving between places. Because you know what it reminded me of? When I lived in Phoenix, we moved once the entire time I lived there. When was I there? Like 5 years. We lived in two apartments. And when we moved, the move from Michigan to Arizona was so horrendous. Like, so just, it was brutal moving across the country like that with a canary and a cat in a U-Haul truck with everything that we owned. Or it was a Ryder truck, whatever, a moving van, right? One of those big freaking moving vans.
Undoubtedly, it was in tip-top shape. And road ready, like it was maintained in a clean room, and then like and unwrapped in your driveway, for where you got to peel the cellophane, and it just smelled fresh and new.
You moved before. Yes, I think that the truck was made in some kind of George Lucas Genosian infested by bug creatures laboratory. had an AM radio, nothing else. You know, this is in 1999, so it's like, really, AM? That's all we got here, huh? No, the thing was a pile of poop, and it took us 3 days to cross the country because we had to stop to sleep because, you know, I wasn't, Ann and I agreed that, you know, I'll do all the driving, but one, because I love my wife, and second, because she wasn't crazy about the idea of driving such a big, we had one of those big moving vans, not like the huge Mayflower trucks, but it was a big van, and we were towing a car behind us too, so not that I was ready to do it, but you know, if Ann said, will you please do it, I'll do it. So anyway, it was a big headache, as anybody who's moved across a couple states is well aware. So when it came to moving just across, we literally just moved across the street to a different apartment complex, we were like, oh God, yeah, I know it's been 4 years, but I just don't want to do this again. So we started the lease to where there was like a month of overlap. So there was like while our lease was closing at our first place, our lease began at the other place. So we had a full month to do the move. And there was this weird state where like half of our lives were in one place, half of our lives were in another place. It cost us quite a bit, actually, because we basically had to pay rent twice. Yeah. We had to pay utilities twice, but that's like how far we would go to not have to go through 2 days of hell of loading everything up and doing that, especially in Arizona where it's 120 degrees in the summertime. I'm telling a long story here, but my point is that when you said that, made that metaphor, it reminded me that, you know, I think that's a great way of thinking about it. Of it's like, do you want to get your place all decorated before you've actually moved your underwear in there, right? You know, are you going to sit there and fuss over your CMS or your CSS tweaks and everything before you're even putting content on there? Or is that something where you can sort of straighten that out afterwards? Like, yeah, there's some weird paint spots. There's some holes in the wall that I got to smooth over with some spackle. But hey, it's comfortable. It's home, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that metaphor, you can look at your own life and see how you've moved, and maybe they'll give you some insights as to the way you can approach website building.
There you go. Yeah, it's moving's traumatic.
I hate it.
Yeah. It's interesting. I probably should do a Polytechnic cast on all the details. Because you know, when you move blogs, Squarespace does help a lot as far as some of the tricks that they do simplify the pains. So it's kind of like hiring movers, where it doesn't make it painless, but like when it was, actually when my wife and I, Kate and I moved into the house where we're currently at, we actually hired movers, and but we didn't hire enough where they moved everything. We were also moving along with them. And so it looked like you had these giant super beings around normal people. And it was funny because like, and the super beings could just like, they grab anything like with like one hand, a pinky or whatever was available. And they just would go, it's a couch. Whoop. Now it's above my head and yeah. Zoom.
Wow.
And it was amazing. And, yeah, anyway,
that's an incredible line of work when you think about it. My job is to pick up things and put them over there. And I am not belittling that as a man who cannot lift things very well.
I think they were college wrestlers. I mean, honestly, it must have been during school, but you know, on the weekend and stuff. So, yeah, they really got into it, and they were eating energy bars at critical times, doing stretches, and you know, it was an athletic thing to be part of, and definitely had to, you know, work to make sure we weren't in their way.
Yeah, yeah, because you'll be crushed.
I mean, they were nice and everything, but yeah, but they were so giants. So
that's awesome. I know that if the time comes where I have to move, Ann and I have agreed we're getting movers, and now I'm really looking forward to the spectacle. Yeah. I'm looking forward to watching giant men take my stuff and put it someplace else.
Yeah. There was too many, many instances where I'm like, yep, yeah, okay, there's going to be two of them that'll pick this up. Nope, one of them. And I'm like, what? Really? How? Okay. And I would see how. It was both. It was skill and equipment and, you know.
Yeah. That's the other thing that we got to underscore. There's skill here, too. I mean, my little brother, you've met him. He's not a little man. People always say, like, he's your little brother? Well, he's my younger brother. But, yes, he could kill me with his bare hands. big guy. The character Max in the front is modeled after my little brother. He's a big, big man. But I see Elliot do that all the time because like he's a mechanic. He works on big, heavy stuff, and he knows how to handle it. And I see him just pick these things up. And to my skinny little scrawny artist arms, he looks like he's doing the impossible. You know, it's like, and then I'll try to move him. I'm like, no, it's not happening. But anyway. But it also is knowing how to lift something too, right? If I tried, maybe I could get it to move a little bit, but I'm also going to throw out my back and do all sorts of terrible things to my insides.
You know, that does remind me that lifting these physical objects is a lot like lifting the tasks and concepts that are all entwined in accomplishing your projects.
Oh no. So to cut me off, you caught me talking the self-depreciating, I'm just a wuss, I'm just a wimp, I'm no good at this stuff. Rob's calling the BS and saying, yes, but we do heroic things with our minds.
Exactly. And it's a skill. I mean, and there's some things that you'll find your strengths, and you obviously, I would say, I mean, we're going to play around with this concept today that you and we shape our projects to try to match those strengths and our available resources.
God, you make it sound so much better than I did when we did the pre-show talk about what to do this week. That was such a better way. That makes it sound so much more deliberate than what I felt like I was going through. Because this last week and a half, I feel like I've been just rolling with punches and sort of like scrambling to pick up my teeth off the floor and go, okay, well, that didn't work. Well, what about this?
That you're a scrapper.
With my mind.
With your mind.
But yeah, no. How do we kick into it? Where do you want to start with this idea of...
Well, I suppose it starts with putting way too much on your plate.
Yeah.
Or let's see, probably starts before that. Probably starts with getting enough skill to take on a project, and somehow it's like a critical mass and or sort of a chemical combination of the right ingredients and then a spark, right? That somehow you cross a threshold where you're like, yeah, I'm going ahead with this. And then maybe you either took on this structuring beforehand, or you took it on after you started trying it, and now you're experiencing the forces of trying it. And then now you got to adjust and wiggle under the forces and make it work.
That was very abstract, but that describes precisely what I was going through this last week and a half. I think about going back, 6 years when I was, well, even longer, when I was getting ready to do my first graphic novel online. I did a lot of pre-planning, a lot of assessment of what kind of time do I have? What do I know I can manage? What kind of promises do I know I can keep? And, I came to the conclusion that I can do a page a week, but I can only do a page a week if it's in black and white. It can't be in color. There was a lot of trade-offs that were being made before I even started drawing the final pages, right? So it was like, drawing everything in advance, doing all the thumbnails for the entire graphic novel in advance, doing time assessments. Okay, well, evaluating based on my past experiences at my freelance illustration jobs, how much can I do in X amount of time? Okay, I know I can achieve this, but I'd love to do this thing in color. That breaks it. I won't be able to keep a weekly schedule if I do this thing in color. Okay, we'll table that for now. So when it came down time to do the book, I did all 214 pages or 200, I don't remember how many, 197, I think, was the actual final page count of comics pages in the book. I think I missed 2 weeks in the entire time that I did that book, and that was because I was moving from Arizona to Texas.
Oof.
And I ran out of buffer, and so I think I had like a week, I think it was 2 weeks I missed out of that whole 197-page stretch. Because I had planned for that time so well. And then once you're in that rhythm, of course, you want to, you feel beholden to an audience and, you don't want to let them down. So you start making, other adjustments in your life.
Yeah.
But conversely, what I'm running into now is I did this, I thumbnailed the story ahead of time like I did before. I worked really hard on that part of it. I did some time assessments. What can I fit into my week? And then I agreed on a production method. Okay, well, here are the what's the word for it when you make concessions? Here's the negotiations I'm going to undergo.
Trade-offs.
Thank you. Here are the trade-offs I'm going to make in order to get this thing whittled down to taking this amount of time. And then when I executed, I found myself going, "Oh, I'm not executing according to the parameters that I originally set for myself." Now it's time to readjust and reevaluate. How am I going to make this thing work?
Sure. So So based on your initial intentions, what were the areas where you noticed that things weren't working out as you planned?
Okay. So the original idea was, let's go back, and I've talked about this in a couple different Lean Into Art casts, and this is another problem, is that I hope this isn't a sign of getting older or something, but it's getting harder and harder for me to remember what we talked about in past shows. And I hope this is just because we've done enough. We've done so many that it's getting hard to remember.
This is number 25.
Okay.
So we've done 25 and yeah.
Yeah. I hope that's it. That's it. I'm just going to say that's it. But
right.
I know I've talked about this before, but it started out of, I was doing these He-Man character redesigns. They were really fast, loose, hour-long little sketch experiments to play around with style. Kim Holm of CartoonArchy.com said, "Boy, I'd love to see the front in that style. You'd be getting a lot more comics work done, and it'd just be fun to look at in that style." I said, "Interesting." Did some test drawings, liked what I saw, decided I've got just the story to do in this style, did the thumbnails. But the original intention was that I was going to do it in the style of these brush pen sketches that I'd been doing, which are fast and loose, like the Boulder and Fleet mini comic I did. Not to spend more than 3 to 4 hours of illustration time per page.
Quick question, though.
Yes.
So Boulder and Fleet versus this other. So subject matter affects my time quite a bit. So if I'm drawing abstract cartoony creatures, essentially a penguin and a mystical guitar, I fly. If I draw a penguin and a mystical guitar and they're humanoid, Catman friend and the other human members of their band and all this kind of stuff, et cetera, humans and detailed instruments and all that kind of stuff and amplifiers and blah, blah, blah. I get a lot slower. So Boulder and Fleet, you have a lot of naturalistic setting and you have, and even though sure they're pulling a wagon and whatnot, but there's just kind of a, I don't know, it's not, it's not the same as you know, like a wood wagon versus a, you know, a big advanced office building, right? Mm-hmm. And that's very different as far as the believability and the precision and the perspective and all that. Sure. And then animals too, Boulder and Fleet, you know, big bear, little bird, yep. And they're cute.
Yep.
So, and they were helping, they were defending a bunch of other cute animals.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, no, yeah. Subject matter does affect this, right? If you're telling a comic story where all of the characters are based on actors that we see on TV, like this is Ed Asner, this is John Cusack, whatnot. Mm. If you're not really good at doing caricature and capturing likeness, that's going to affect the amount of time you spend on every page, right? That's going to be something, mm-hmm. That's a battle you're going to be fighting with every single page. Trust me, I've been there. So yeah, of course that counts. And that's something that I didn't anticipate. It was something where I thought that looseness and that vitality that I found in these ink sketches could easily be mapped onto the front and it will just work. What I didn't count on is that once I applied that looseness and what I perceived to be vitality onto these characters that mean so much to me is that it didn't work for me. I'm certain that if I held up the inked page, the first brush pen inked page of the first page of the story, Petty Dreadful, against the one I inked in Manga Studio, not many people would really be persnickety about it. They'd be like, what? The brush ink page looks fine. There might be a couple people who are like, yeah, well, but for the most part, probably most people would not even really care or notice all that much. But I noticed, and it was something where I kept looking at it again and again, and it wasn't where I was being like maestro with the long hair and the baton, saying, you know, with a German accent, no, this will not do. It just kind of was bugging me. It was making me itchy. And that's when I sat down and said, well, let's try inking this in Manga Studio and see what I get. And I liked what I got. It was crisper. It was cleaner. Had all the fluidity and energy that the brush pen had, but it had none of the sloppiness that the brush pen has. But that increased the amount of time that the page took. And that's where I started to get worried, where I said, this is not going to happen. 3 hours a page. There's no way I can do this in 3 hours a page. So it turned into a shell game of, okay, well, how can I reshuffle this? So is to make this work for me and keep myself motivated to keep working on it. Well, I don't think that's going to be a problem, but how do I do this in a way where it makes sense to share it online? Why share it online if it's going to not be every week or three times a week or every day, right? Because that's the common wisdom. You're supposed to do that every day.
Well, that has been the common wisdom in the past. But I mean, people we know that have kind of thrown that right up in the air. We've seen that work out well. I think it depends on your audience. It depends on your style. Yeah. And also, I think the overall culture has shifted as far as how we pay attention to updates. It's less about going to bookmarks in your web browser every day at your, you know, during your coffee break. Yeah. It's more other methods, social network updates and stuff that come when they come. And then the chances are you're not just subscribed to one, where a bookmark, you go to one thing. It's not like this rich source of a stream. It's a puddle, you know, mm-hmm. or a pond or an ocean, whatever, but it's one.
Right. It's provincial.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. As opposed to the cosmopolitan. Right. Mm. Yeah, no, I even hear some people talking about not even really using RSS feeds anymore. Some people are saying, like, I don't even bother with RSS feeds because I just subscribe to the people's Twitter feed or Facebook feed or whatever and get it pushed to me when it's time rather than having to, like, log into a reader of some sort, which surprised me. I mean, I thought RSS was king, but maybe that's even, you know, becoming less valuable to the average consumer. I don't know.
Probably. I mean, I think people will naturally find that best balance of whatever's going to be really handy and helpful and available in common. So I would imagine that's going to be social network streams of one sort or another, probably Facebook, Twitter, Google+.
I got to admit, Facebook is starting to make sense to me after how many years? Here I am. I'm looking around like, well, that Facebook thing, that's actually pretty kind of neat what you got over there.
Them computers. I don't know.
I'm poking the icons. But no, it's finally making sense to me in a certain sense. It's like, okay, so like all these different entertainers and content creators have Facebook fan pages or Facebook subscriptions open. And then now I, the consumer, get to go onto this thing where all my friends are. And I get to watch my friends all talking about stuff or talk with them. Like, oh, so-and-so just posted a picture of them with their baby at the beach. And then I can say, comment, nice. And then all of a sudden, ping, another thing in my feed. Oh, hey, that entertainer that I like also did something. It's, you know, I get it now. I finally get it now. I get why it's so compelling for so many people. So, yeah, I mean, it's like an RSS reader, except it also has your social life in it as well. Okay. It only took me 7 years to finally understand that.
And so one of the side effects of having that kind of capability means it's a more flexible flow is reasonable, and just being communicative and then updating, letting people know when you update and letting people, yeah, probably letting people know you exist from time to time, even though you're not updating, is probably a good enough of a heartbeat within that kind of context.
But do you think so? Because the thing that I wondered about when I was wrestling with all this stuff, and this is where we can, and we're really kind of sort of like, we're making our preliminary steps into the topic of, you know, of how a project can affect your life versus your life affecting a project and how those two forces kind of intertwine.
Sure.
Is that one of the things I thought about is like, okay, what happens if like I'm on page 6 and page 7 takes a month to get done?
Mm-hmm.
And then I ping Twitter, Facebook, everything. Hey, here's page 7. People are like, oh yeah, that front thing. Is he still working on that? And they go to it and they're like, oh, there's only one new page. I was here a month ago and I saw page 6. So clearly not a lot's going on here. You know,
it depends on how you want to manage that. I mean, so that the production of page 7 could be a story in and of itself.
That's where I was going. That's exactly where I was going. Okay, you anticipated my... I must have telegraphed my punches there because suddenly my hand went there and you were just gone. You're up in the rafters.
You punched the shadow, Rob. I'm behind you.
That's exactly what I was thinking about is that I thought, well, why do we share online? Why do I share online? Because I like to share, obviously. Am I after a big cash grab with this book? No, obviously. Do I expect any great things out of this book? I expect it to be a good testament to my love of the medium and the kinds of stories I like to tell. If more comes out of that, awesome. I'll watch for those opportunities and I'll try to jump on the ones that show up. But I'm not walking into this with this grandiose scheme of this is how it's going to make me $1 million, you know?
You're going to be a star.
Yeah. I think that business is totally important. I want my work to work for me, but I also recognize that in the world of the internet, success is not a repeatable formula. I can't just look at, you know, I'm just going to do what that guy did and then it's going to work for me. I got to, you know, find my own way into it. And that means keeping my eyes open for opportunities and just doing what feels right to me. Does that sound fair? Or did I just say like a bunch of roly-poly squishy stuff like at the end of a He-Man episode?
What I heard is, you know what? I'm going to work with my salt mine and I'm not going to think of the hammock. I don't want to, I got to take the hard route. And that's what's right. That's what's pure.
Wow.
I'm totally joking. BSing big time. No, it's being silly. Honestly, one thing I'm hearing from this part of the conversation is something that resonates with a bit of our design talk, which maybe I see the world a little bit too squishy and abstract. Fair enough. But I'm hearing that I think it'll be a theme in this conversation as well, is trying to bump up against what's a constraint and what's a compromise. And then how it works to process either situation to land on what you want to work with. So like constraint versus compromise, you probably had a guess of what would be your constraints when you set forth, but then you were like, well, I'm going to work with the looser pen. And then all of a sudden, that wasn't the real constraint. That wasn't, there was like discovering that, I don't know, discovering the strength of a kind of material you're going to use to construct something. And you're like, well, wait a minute, that's not the right construction material. I got to try this other one. So you're still kind of trying to find the constraint. Then you discovered it's all of a sudden it's more time. And then maybe that could lead to compromise.
This
right?
material makes the product the way I want it to look and feel.
Yep.
And but this material costs a little bit more. It takes longer to ship it. You know?
Yeah.
And so, okay, well, then the question is raised, how do I work with that? If I'm going to do this thing and it's not going to update on a regular schedule, and when I say irregular schedule, I mean, like, let's just assume the worst and something happens, like, okay, in the next couple of months, I'm going to be in full-on Kids Read Comics organization mode. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of work to put that event together. It could be that a month might go by without an update. I'm not saying that I'm trying to cut myself, you know, let myself off the hook and say, hey, it happens when it happens. I'm going to pour everything I got into this book. But, you know, stuff happens. And as I'm lining up this project to try to make it into something that I want to work for me, I got to get ready for that eventuality. If the materials are more costly and take longer to ship. What are you going to say? You took a breath.
It's just it's such an interesting puzzle and a challenge. I mean, so it's kind of like all of us who want to make webcomics and are publish in the 21st century way. And it's not just a given flow of webcomics, whatever that is, ebooks, anything. We all take a look at these other models and I think to some extent have to deal with either blowing off comparing ourselves against them or we end up comparing against them.
Yep.
And we're individual independent creators are not big companies. We are inherently single person shops running a business, running a, every role in the, and every facet of making that comic and making and distributing it and marketing it. It's on your shoulders. So that is a different picture. Those are different constraints than Marvel's dealing with.
Oh yeah.
So, right. So Marvel or DC, I mean, they have, obviously they have to run a tight ship and they have to watch their budgets and whatnot, but they are serving a larger audience that's able to fund their model. Cool. Awesome. Good for them. That rocks. But they have a different machine that has different constraints because of that.
Right.
So they can have a higher page output than one person, which kind of makes sense.
Totally. Totally.
And, but then
same with manga, you know, where they have assistants to help with all of the production of the pages, but they still kill themselves. I've seen what a manga artist's work week looks like and, it's pretty brutal. But anyway, but yeah, you're right. You're right. You can't play the comparison game because I'm not those companies. I'm not even like the web cartoonist next to me. You know, we each have our own very specific situations, right? Some
Good
of us
point.
Have families. I've got three jobs that are very, you know, non-traditional jobs. So there's all sorts of different mitigating circumstances, and all we can do is work with what we've got and leverage what we think of. So, okay, we already said that. So going back to where my story here is that I thought, well, if that's the case, if I have to prepare myself for the eventuality that it may be a month before a page gets done sometimes, again, not making excuses for myself, not letting myself off the hook, just accepting the fact that the worst can happen, why put it online at all? Wait until the damn book is done. Don't release anything to the public until the whole thing is done. And then, boom, here's the thing. Or finish it over the course of this year and then serialize it at the end of the year. Serialize it a page a week for however many weeks. And you look like a hero, right? Could do that. Yeah, I could do that. But I really just want that satisfaction and that kind of momentum that you get out of sharing something as you're working on it. It's written. There's a few edits that I'm probably going to make here and there along the way, but you know, I like that kind of enthusiasm and energy one gets out of sharing while something's coming together. The other thing I considered is you said, I'm not Marvel. I don't have their concerns. Having worked on projects that are under publishing deals and under like licensing contracts, signing NDAs and whatnot, I've been in the unhappy situation where I'm drawing really neat stuff that I'm super excited about and I don't get to show it to anybody until it hits the stores.
Right.
And, well, that's great because I get a check and then I get to walk away from the project and I don't have to think about it ever again. On the other hand, it's painful while it's happening. I mean, I worked with Kevin and Mark on Kevin Cross of KevinCross.net, Mark Rudolph of MarkRudolph.com, and Sarah Turner of Cricket-Press.com on a series of trading cards for Marvel Comics last year or the year before. I don't even remember now, but it was a whole bunch of the Marvel Superhero Squad style characters on cards. And that was a super fun job. I really enjoyed it. It was the first time I really enjoyed drawing Marvel characters, and I got paid well for it. Great thing. But it was like 8 months before I could even say anything to anybody about it, you know?
Oh, yeah. Non-disclosure agreements.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very familiar with them, too. And, I mean, there was... It's hard. I mean, obviously, it's one of the awesome things about being independent is you can... And I love that you mentioned that whatever you end up choosing and your constraints and whatever you put together for your model, it's not even just different between you and Marvel. It's different between you and the next yep. webcomic creator. I mean,
yeah,
that is so darn true.
It's really important to remember because...
valid. So wanting to share, that's awesome. I mean, I don't know. Obviously, I have a similar bias because... You know, I've had a comic where I'll go on hiatus and whatnot, and it's not my preference, but yeah, I mean, different things come up, and I don't take it lightly, but boy, do I identify with that. And just to mention the funny connection between our initial talk of moving and and challenges with, you know, with that in real life and how it's a good metaphor for certain things. I can't imagine how you moved during an update schedule that you were keeping up like that. And that must have been so stressful because I'm not trying to say like, and how dare you have dropped the ball, yeah. But I'm just saying like, just putting a really huge underline under that. Like, yeah, it's,
you know, not to totally be one of those guys who's always talking about how wonderfully supportive their wife is, you know, cartoonists, you always hear this from cartoonist guys who are married to women. my wife is so patient. My wife is so patient. Well, I'm super lucky because my wife is an artist and she understands A, what it's like to be a creative person, and B, she understands how important comics are to me. You know, I mean, she really gets it. Because she was there. I was this way about comics when she met me back in 1992. So, she knows. So she knew that. She knew that once we got to Texas, day one, I would have to be drawing. And even though it was for this webcomic that didn't make many money, she knew it was an important enough thing that she was not going to be like, whatever, you're helping me set up the closet, you know? She's not that kind of wife. So I really got to take my hat off to her. It helps to be married to the right person.
That is awesome. Because I didn't even think of that, too. That makes sense to me so much that you would, yeah, just would have a ridiculous burning need to, like, get back to.
And it was the same way when we moved to Arizona too. I was under deadline for some projects for Antarctic Press. I mean, publishing, you know, publication stuff where I was getting paid, I was drawing up until the day while the truck was loaded and sitting in the driveway. I was drawing comics pages on a big clipboard went behind the seat of the truck, you know. And then the moment we got to the new place and got like the last of the boxes off the truck, I was back to drawing again. Anyway, so yeah, it helps to have the right people in your life for sure. Go back to this comparison thing real quick. One of the things that I thought of as I was evaluating, well, what am I going to do about this? These pages are going to take longer than I thought. I looked at Aaron Diaz of Dresden Kodak. Now, Dresden Kodak, phenomenally popular webcomic. The guy's making a living off his webcomic. Does not have an update schedule. He gets the pages done when they are done. He's like Michelangelo up there, and there's Rex Harrison on the floor going, "When will you make an end?" He turns around and says, "When I am finished." That was a movie quote, by the way. Which, Agony and the Ecstasy with Charlton Heston or Rex Harrison. Rob has not seen it.
You didn't even ask.
Didn't have to. That's going to be one of our t-shirts we sell at leadintoart.com. Is going to be insert movie name here. Rob hasn't seen it. Drawing of Rob going. I thought, well, Aaron Diaz made it work, you know. Maybe I'll just look at what his secret is. And then I caught myself and said, no, that works for Aaron Diaz. He's Aaron Diaz. He's a different guy. And it's not to say that he's Aaron Diaz, echo, echo, echo. He's Aaron Diaz. He's another guy. I'm Jersey Drost. I'm another guy. I can't just mimic what he did and expect it to work for me. Maybe it would, but probably not. So, okay. Well, we can't just count on the fact that Jersey's going to pour his guts into this, make it the best-looking book ever, and that will be enough for it to turn into some kind of sustainable thing. What else can I do? Well, as I just said, I'm Jerzy Drozd. I'm not this guy. I'm not that guy. What is the intrinsic thing to me? What is the thing that defines, not defines, what are some of the inherent qualities that come to mind when I think about my presence online? Opening up process, sharing, enthusiasm. I love comics and I love talking about what makes comics tick, at least from my standpoint. Bingo. Okay, well, what if I'm not under any kind of publication contract, any kind of NDA? I could put the thumbnails online tomorrow and just share them with everybody. I could. What's stopping me? You know, what? Oh, it's going to spoil the story. So what? I'm not a big fan of spoilers or the whole idea of spoilers. I don't need to have the secret at the end of the movie in order to make it a good movie. And what's more is if people don't want the spoilers, don't freaking read it till it's done. I'll let you know when the thing's done. Just don't pay attention to the site until it's done. And so then can the story in between the intermittent spurts, can it just be about all of the process? And then, if by chronicling this whole process, now I've got material for a really cool special features edition of an ebook of the finished book. The book's done. Now I've got this premium edition with a full length, like 2-hour featurette on how this book was made. Again, sweet. Who's that going to be interesting to? A very small niche population. But isn't that one of the ways we market our stuff, right?
Exactly. And that is one of the strengths of being an independent creator, because your model isn't as much based on, well, if anyone else hears the whisper of the secret, they could basically start a trend in the industry and creating demand in the market that is associated with their brand, not my brand. And oh no, part of the, you know, you have that flexibility and that approachability also, where it's not like, you know, excuse me, Marvel logo, how are you doing today?
I like how you call it Marvel logo. Faceless thing. Or it's a Hydra, whichever you want to call it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm doing stuff right now that I can't show people because it's for pay. It's work for hire stuff where I don't own the stuff. And while it may be work that represents me, it represents my skill level and whatever kind of talent you would want to, you know, apply to me. It's not my work. It's not the thing that I want to represent my brand or whatever you want to call it. The front is. So I want to make sure it's the best thing that can be. I need more time to do that. So how do I fill in the gaps? Either A, don't share it at all and just wait till it's done. Or B, if you're going to share it, find where the extra narrative is. And that was the answer I landed on. And what got me excited about it was I'm always a fan of when something can serve two purposes at the same time, when something can be double duty. And I love the idea of it being the narrative of the page itself. Some friends in the past have made fun of me for trying too hard to make the cartoonist's comic, the comic that is not really approachable by the fans, and it's too loaded with me trying to challenge myself with densely packed or ambitious layouts or whatever.
Aficionado stuff,
I guess. I get kind of itchy about even like using those words for my own work, just because it sets off my obnoxious arrogant jerk alarms in my brain. But I do sweat that kind of stuff. I do really try to set myself challenges on every page. I think it's still approachable to the general public, but whatever. But if that's the case, if that truly is a quality of my work that maybe for better or worse, then why not play to that? Play to that by like opening up the process for the aficionados to participate in that process. Somebody's going to come out and say, dude, people have been doing this for years. Live streaming, right? What is it called? Ustream, Justin TV, sure. Yep. Live stream. This isn't new. I know that. But I'm talking about opening it up even further. So it's not just like, oh, watch me draw next week's page and you get a special sneak peek. I'm saying like blogging it every day. Blogging every day about this thing. Blogging about everything that I'm going through. And maybe this stuff would be considered minutia by some. They don't have to read it. You know, it's like I went ahead and posted the first page at thefront.me. And I thought about blogging this. One of the sound effects I was really happy with was the soldiers who were shooting at Dick Courage. I came up with the sound effect for their laser guns. Tuffa, 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 tuffa. T-U-F-F-A. And when I first came up with it, I thought, well, it's kind of like the word tough. And I don't know if I like that because people are going to think that I'm just like saying like, oh, their guns are tough. But then I worked out the rhythm, tuffa, tuffa, tuffa. And I was like, that's perfect. That's the perfect arrangement of letters. And I was really, really happy with that. And I thought, that deserves a blog post. Let's walk through the process of how I came up with tuffa, tuffa. Again, is that interesting to everybody? No way. But it's interesting to me and maybe three other people. And now I'm building a body of narrative that I can now scrape and turn into extra features on an ebook. There's that double duty I'm talking about. It becomes the narrative in between the updates and also serves when it's done. Now I've taken the pains to collect all of that material for publication afterwards.
And I would say that in sort of codifying, solidifying, and expressing the experience as you're experiencing it, isn't there a little bit more that you're getting out of it as well?
I think so. I'm a big fan of concretizing a learning experience in some way or another. Trying to reiterate what was explored in that moment in order to drive that point home extra hard. Inculcate. I think that's really important, but not everybody works that way, right? There are some people who, you know, they're pure intuition, and that's totally awesome. If you can do that from pure intuition, hats off to you, sir, because I can only get through these kind of things by thinking really hard and sweating bullets over it for hours on end. But that's different, you know, thinking and learning modalities at work there, right?
I would argue they're just more of the sort of constraints and compromises too, where you could say, well, yeah, I know my quirks, but I'm going to try something different and then purposefully compromise and use that as sort of, well, and I don't know, you can get kind of debate the meaning of constraint versus compromise, but you could introduce those ingredients as part of your method for a project as a way to learn. Maybe you're not always playing to your strengths. Maybe you're trying to overcome weaknesses, or maybe you're trying to, you know, build new strengths or what have you.
Yeah.
We've reused the example a fair amount, but for instance, you know, diving into Manga Studio during 24-hour comic day to do that. And
that's actually your experience doing that was what gave me the courage to try inking the front that way. Because when you said like, well, I didn't know anything about Manga Studio, I just started doing it. And I did it on a 24-hour comic day of all days, where the pressure's really on to figure this tool out now, right?
Yep.
So my thinking was that, oh no, I can't do that. So what I'll do is I'll do my warm-up sketches, my daily warm-up sketches, or not-so-daily warm-up sketches in Manga Studio for the next 6 months. And when I feel like I've really gotten a handle on the program, then I'll start using it for my comics work. Then I decided, you know what? I'm not happy with the way this page one inked version looks like. Here's another thing. It's like, I don't know if this is me being neurotic or me just caring a lot. You, the dear listener, you get to decide. But don't tell me where you land. Just be satisfied with your own decision on this. Because I like to know, I like to think that I figured it out for myself where I stand on it. But is this neurotic or is this caring? I penciled the page, and then I printed on blue lines, and I inked it by hand, and then I went ahead and scanned it and flatted it in Photoshop. Didn't like it. So then I took the pencils, imported it into Manga Studio, re-inked the entire page, re-flatted it, and then colored it. So I almost did the page twice in order to figure out which one looked better. But it was upon looking at that inked page that I said, well, let's just try it in Manga Studio and see what I get. See where I get. It was just an experiment, just playing around. I'm just going to give myself an extra day and just do this. And I loved it. Do I feel like I've understood Manga Studio in its entirety? No, but I got a handle on the inking things. And I still don't understand the whole story view. I'm still playing with that, but.
Yeah, I've been playing with it more and continuing with my comic, Pick and Crunchy Separate Days. And and you can tell easily that the first 10 pages I finished during 24-hour comic day, and then the next five have been, let's see, so yeah, I think, yeah, five I've done since, have been done obviously under different time constraints, as I do a lot more embellishments, and I'm trying to apply lessons that I learned from Jersey's classes on doing sound effects. And which is kind of a, hey, that's really been on my goals for a long time. And now I really want to introduce that to the next phase of the story. Mm. It's no longer going to be this optional thing that I let fall to the wayside. I'm not letting a page go out until I'm satisfied with the sound effects.
Yeah.
That's it. And now I've redefined what is a page for me. And right. so I guess I'm big on to having like that thing, like my definition of a page, and that's yes. what I have to meet.
Yes.
And I guess that's the big recipe of those constraints and compromises, more or less.
And that knowledge of when a page is done can be something that is intuitive. Like, you know, you don't, for me anyway, I don't know when it's done until I stand back and look at it and go, I think it's done. There was a full half hour after I finished coloring page one where I monkeyed around with some different color settings where the last panel of page one has Dick Courage getting knocked back into the page by he's like running out of the page and then he gets knocked back into the page by an explosion on the bottom right corner of the page. And the background's like this red splatter. And I played around with shading Dick in shades of red, like adding just a little bit of red to his overall color scheme because the panel's red after all. Turn it on, turn it off, turn it on, turn it off, turn it on, turn it off. You know, I don't like it with the red, you know, it's done. You know, adding like a couple more different little layer effects. On, off, like an optometrist, right? I'm like, better sure. better this way or that way? This way or that way?
Yep.
It's done. Now, my gut says it's done, right? So you have to find that kind of like inner sense of when it's done. And then, you know, I pass it around to my friends. I pass it around from like guys like you and Krishna Sinasvam and Ryan Estrada and some other people whose opinions I trust and said, what do you think? Does this look okay? And I got a few words of insight on it. And then, you know, I weighed them against what I hold to be true. And if it didn't meet, well, that's that. I'll just keep going. Or if they had some good points, oh, I better make that change. None of these people get to determine when I feel like it's done. I'm just asking some trusted friends, what do you think? This idea of, I want to step back and sort of abstract this again. So this doesn't just come off as like me whining about my life. What did I do here as I was evaluating all these different pros and cons and different things? And as I was coming up with a strategy for this book, which I should say 6 months from now, I may completely change my gears on it. I get to do that. I'm a small company. I get to have the loose knees on the ship. And if I decide that...
When it comes to a project that I'm working on, I can promise you I'll be doing that. Yeah. It took me years to accept this about myself, that it's part of my voice as an artist.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I think I will produce certain small islands of totally coherent, consistent comic work that will stand as like, oh, wow, he used the same tools on every page. Neat. But, you know, that isn't today. Anyway, but yeah, yeah. Funny. And no, you're saying you are like with all the intent and process that you've assembled, you know, I don't know. It's interesting to hear that you may even think
because I
switching it up.
Well, again, it's about keeping your eye open for opportunities. And when I say that, I have to use examples to say what it's not in order to get at what it is. I'm not talking about keeping my eye out for opportunities when the right agent comes along to say, hey, I want to make toys out of this. Keeping my eye out for the opportunity where a movie company comes along and says, hey, we want to make a cartoon series out of this. Or keeping my eye open for when that publisher comes along with that big, fat, giant, Price is Right sized check that's going to just make my life a better place. That I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about opportunities where by iterating on my strategy and by sharing it in different ways and by testing out different ways to approach an update schedule, which is really just about getting the book done, but also about like sharing it in a compelling way. When I find something that works, I might steer the ship a little bit more toward that star and say, this one thing I did, that might work. That seems to get a lot of attention, or a lot of traction. Traction is more important than attention, right? If you got 1,000 people who are giving you traction, that's way better than a million people who don't give you much traction. That's an important distinction to make, isn't it?
Good point.
So I might steer the ship differently. And I might say, you know what, this one thing I was doing, I'm not going to do that part anymore, or I'm not going to share this, or I'm not going to do it in this way anymore because I'm finding traction. It's sort of keeping my options open. But I've got a map of the ocean laid out, and we're going to go generally speaking this way, and we're going to, you know, start this time of the day. And we're going to take these provisions and we're going to assume that we're going to encounter a storm here and there. And this is what we're going to do to try to circumvent that or to deal with it in the best way possible.
Oh, boy. I wish I'd looked this up already. But I mean, essentially, no plan survives contact with the enemy.
There you go.
It's just, yeah, being pretty comfortable with that idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. And having a sense of playfulness. Now, one more thing before we get to the abstraction, because we are coming up on the end of the hour and I want to make sure we have time for everything. Mm-hmm. I don't want anybody also misunderstand me to say that you should treat every project this way. Boulder and Fleet is an excellent example of something where I was engaging in the spirit of play and having fun with it. We did an episode, two episodes ago now, you know, leveling up through play, making a game out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always trying to urge my students to just make a sloppy mini comic, just throw something together and learn from that and have fun with it. That's the only way you're gonna do better. I'm talking about something that this is a separate thing. This is something where I've leveled up sufficiently where I think I'm pretty darn good at this thing. Even people who have actively yelled at me online in some form or another agree that I'm pretty good at this thing. So I think that that's enough proof that I'm good.
Your enemies
at it.
Respect you.
Yeah, when even people who find my personality repellent think that I'm good at this drawing stuff. Okay, I've leveled up to the sufficient, and I'm not saying that other people haven't. I'm just saying that I've leveled up to the point where this is a different kind of project for me. This is a serious project. This is something where I've spent years and years and years of my life whittling, polishing, buffing to get it just so. And I'm still going to engage in the spirit of play with other things. But this one is different. This one is special. And so it deserves a different kind of treatment than other things. So I don't want anybody to say, like, one of the problems that we're going to run into, Rob, by doing this kind of stuff is people are going to assume that when we say something, it's one size fits all. And that's totally not where we're coming from.
Yeah, I think we have I'm pretty sure that both of us have alarms that go off in our heads every so many minutes where we just involuntarily start disclaiming stuff.
Yeah, I know.
And I know I've given you guff about it, but I do it too. And in a lot of it is just to make sure that, I mean, this is very independent. It's very personal. It's whatever you're assembling as what is working for you. But it's fun to watch and dissect what is working for other people, even though that, yep, that is not you. But well, one of the ways that we can learn is we can observe and then dissect and look at the relative effects of the different parts. Like, for instance, looking at someone's penciling process and thinking like, wow, that is way different than what I do. They're doing it totally electronically, or they're doing it, you know, at three different page sizes in progressive levels of detail and whatever. And then you know, say,
good point. So when I looked at Aaron Diaz's Dresden Codec update schedule and said, well, I shouldn't compare myself to that man because I'm not him. It was not to discount the observation. It was to say, don't compare yourself directly. Don't assume that just taking his model wholesale will suddenly work for you. But it was worth looking at. Here was the takeaway. The takeaway was, here's a guy who is not updating on a regular schedule, and it's working. Therefore, there must be a way that's the proof of concept that one can do in a regular update schedule, and it can work for them. How can I do that in my own way? So it's not to just rip him off entirely. I made my observations. I looked at it and said, interesting, fascinating. How is he doing that? What is he doing? How is he, you know, what is he doing in between updates? And then, okay, now that I've made my observations, I got my data from the guy. Now, how do I take that and look at it through my own lens, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it is useful to look at the way other people suss this stuff out and figure out their own strategy to do it, because there's a germ of a general idea at work there. And it's if you don't get mired in the details of their specific way of doing it, you can learn a lot from watching other people.
Essentially, you can make some of those ideas your own, and it's not here's a test to know when you're going the wrong way. If you're essentially doing it in a way where you're trying to get their permission for doing it right.
Explain. Yeah. You better be a little bit more specific than I know where you're going with that, but just for those.
So let's say you do like a penciling process that you found that someone else does. And as you start to do it, you seem to be breaching your goals, but like, I don't know, maybe,
Okay.
It's squishy. Basically, if you showed that person the page and they had the right, if you've given them the right to tell you if you're doing it right or wrong, you've gone too far. There you go. That's my opinion. Like, make it your own.
I watch a process video where George Perez pencils this really specific way, right? So it's like, mm-hmm. I thumbnail it this size. I blow it up with a light box, or not light box. What are those little projector jobs they used to use
back? Oh, sure.
You know what I'm talking about? You put the page, like a little piece of paper on like this little overhead projector looking thing, and then it projects up onto a wall and you blow it up super big. That's the way they used to do it before computers.
Sure. Mural painters still do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess they do.
Or heck, they even use digital projectors too.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And so I see this process video. George Perez does it this way. I start doing that way. And I'm like, hey, this is working. This is really working. And then I find myself in a situation, my projector broke. And a friend on my right says, hey, why don't you just scan it in and blow it up in Photoshop and print it out? You can use my big printer over here. You just print it like super huge on that. No. That's not the way George Perez does it. He does it with a projector. That would achieve the same thing, but that's not the way he does it, right? That's another way of asking permission, is that you are overly deferential to a system as prescribed by some guru or master, right? There's that word.
The anti-gurus show up.
The kind of gurus we would probably be if we ever ran a dojo would be, it's like, listen to everything I do everything I do, and now break every one of those rules and be just as effective. Please be just as effective by breaking all those rules. Negotiate as much as possible. Please do. Nothing makes me happier than when a student in one of my classrooms gives me a question that completely dismantles what I've written on the board, you know, is when I get to say, that's interesting. Let's talk about that for a second. And then when I get to tell the student, wow, that was a really, really great thought. Can I have your permission to take that to my next class? Because I really want to share that with my next class. That is a really, really cool moment. And I mean it when I say that too.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, yeah.
Whether, even though you're not here with us during this recording, you're participants.
Yeah.
We're not telling you exactly what and how to do. But you know what? We really, really, really care about making stuff and making comics and intentional forms of communication. And
I forgot I wrote this down yesterday when we were talking about it. Where did I put this? Where did I put that? I wrote it down.
I think I have an idea what you're talking about.
I captured it. And it was, we were going to change the tagline to the show, was the show for people who give it. Here we go. The show for people who make stuff and people who give a crap about making stuff. You coined that one. And that was so good. That's exactly what we're trying to do here. The show for people who make stuff and people who give a crap about making stuff.
Yeah, because there's a whole lot of, stuff that happens, like no plan survives contact with the enemy kind of thing. I'm misquoting or overly abbreviating some Art of War thing right there. But at the same time, it's still valid to plan. It's still valid. And that's what we're doing here. I mean, so what we're unboxing this topic of structuring your project to get the most out of it. And how does it fit and work with, you know, your constraints, and you know, when is it compromised and when is it okay, or when have we experienced it being okay to make these different trade-offs? And here you go, we're transparently sharing that kind of process, and because we care about making stuff and we know that it helps to hear about how people go about those things.
And the other thing I would say as another disclaimer to throw on top of all this is that these are decisions that I'm making after almost 10 years of engaging online. I'm not going to say that I have a ton of experience, but I've walked around my little, my
patio.
Yes, thank you. I've walked around the deck. I've looked at the trees, and I've seen a few things on the internet and how it works. And I think about it a lot, and I listen to other people who talk about it a lot. And so I was making some decisions that were informed by some experience. Now, and as somebody who has created a lot of content, whether it's comics or audio or whatever, I've done a lot of digital publishing of different kinds. So when I said, how do I take what other people have done and make it work for myself within the context of my own idiosyncrasies, my own personal narrative? How do I do this in a way that's truly unique to me and really kind of reflects what my ethos is? I can see somebody coming to this who's fresher, who maybe hasn't run a website before. Maybe they just started up a Tumblr and they've been doing a few things there on Pinterest, sharing a few images. I can see them being like, well, I don't know what my idiosyncrasy is as a publisher. Granted, if that's the case, then that's something where you just got to get involved and share a little bit and figure out what that is. I had to figure it out. Look, when I started doing webcomics, I was hell-bent that the author has no voice. Man, that sounds so weird to say now. The author should have no voice in the work. The work should speak for itself. The author shouldn't be present on the site. I should not even blog. My blog on the front site originally was maintained by Thirsty, one of the characters of the book.
Mm.
I had no presence whatsoever. I didn't have any photos of me online. And when people came to see me at conventions, I would request that they don't take my picture. Or if they did, I made them promise not to post it on the internet. And you know, that turned around. It changed as I played around with it and engaged with it. I found different ways of engaging until I found what felt natural to me. But I started with a different assumption at the outset, and I figured it out. Just talking to a friend who I'm trying to get to do more with their work online. And the notion of just starting up a dumb little Tumblr and just playing with it and figuring it out is so antithetical to the way, the 20th century way of you set up shop and you make business cards, and it has the business card has certain art on it and has your phone number so people know where to call you, and there's a marquee that is designed to match the branding of your business card, and you put up an open sign and you're open for business. You're done, right?
Yeah.
You don't innovate a shop, or innovate, what am I saying? You don't iterate a shop, not that much. Right, you might move some things around, but for the most part, a deli is a deli, you know. And if you're going to iterate, it's going to be an expensive proposition. And so, this idea of today it might be a photo blog, tomorrow it might be an audio blog, the next day it might be just you just writing off angry missives about parking meters. It's whatever feels natural to you at that moment is a crazy idea to some people, you know.
And yeah, and even if you accept it, it still can be hard to get used to. Because not to go into it in high depth, we've covered this a few different times. Yeah. Again, like how Art Geek Zoo is like a ton of different styles. I mean, but through it all, in practicing those, especially the first 2.5 years, I started to figure out more about what I did care more about and what became less optional. Because it's not, I'm proud of the work, and I think there's different strengths and weaknesses in it, and by doing it, I was able to discover those things and then go seek other opinions and level up.
Yeah.
And grow in the topic enough to where now I have new measures. Like, so my recipe really has changed again, surprise, which it kept doing even before, but it's different aspects have changed as far as flexibility with what I'm willing to put out there, different goals, like for anything from like, okay, Jersey's class on doing sound effects to Christian's class on the outline and silhouettes of characters. And it wasn't Krishna's only thing in his class, just like Jersey's class wasn't only just about sound effects, but those are two really good examples of the kinds of food for thought that I just said, well, this is, I want to bring this in and make it my own voice, because yeah, it won't look like Jersey sound effects or it won't look like Krishna's characters, but it's now informing part of my recipe, and I want it to, and I'm choosing to do that. And yet at the same time, I'll be discovering how the heck that works out.
Yep.
As I do it.
Yeah. I think that's a recurrent theme on a lot of our talks is that spirit of playfulness, that spirit of.
Even if you're scared out of your mind and crapping your pants, it's iteration. And
dude, and this is what I said, you know, well over a year ago when I did that Ignite talk in January of last year, is when I was about to step on that stage and I had to summarize why I love comics in 5 minutes, and I practiced my talk, had my slides advance every, what was it, 20, no, 5 seconds?
I think it's 15 seconds or something.
15 seconds. You have 25 slides or 20 slides, whatever. They advance automatically over 15 seconds. It's a really challenging kind of way to present, and I'd never done it before. I was in front of 500 people or something like that, and I was just so, so scared. I mean, I was really, really torqued up, as anybody would be. In addition to that fear was also the sense of I'm doing something right. I'm doing something that I'm going to be really glad I did, even if I fall on my face and look terrible, even if I go up there and I'm like, oh, gee, I suck, and walk off the stage. I still did the thing. I tried to do the thing. And I know that when I've got that ashen feeling in my stomach, that I'm doing something right here, creatively speaking. Obviously, mm-hmm. I'm not going to go, you know, hang by my fingertips off of a bridge and go, ha, that fear is there. I'm doing something right. But yeah, you know, it's like when we talk about...
And then think to yourself, this was way easier than doing that Ignite talk.
Oh, man, that was so scary. I had the pleasure of doing it again less than a year later in Ignite Great Lakes. And doing it a second time around was so much better. You watch the videos. I'm so much more relaxed in the second one. My point is that, you know, it's like we talk about play, but also, man, we're faking our way through it. We're scared out of our minds and we don't know if we're going to do it right. And we've got families to support. But on the other hand, it's like you only get, this is going to sound dumb, but you only get to go around once, man. Mm-hmm. If you don't get to scare yourself a little bit while doing things that are really exciting and fun, then gosh.
Yeah. And there is, it's also to acknowledge that in a spirit of play, I mean, in some ways that's a way to deal with the tension of being scared as hell of doing it. And let's see, the excitement, you can also, that's why it's so awesome. I like how you really endorse the idea of people just doing a mini comic, finishing and get that experience of building something small. Even if you fail, you still succeed because you finished something and you get a taste for that. And obviously you start, I think partially what I'm doing now in this iteration of my project and maybe what other people do as you iterate is you take on bigger gambles.
That's where I am now. I'm taking on a bigger gamble based on a bunch of smaller gambles that I took starting in 1993, right? So I did all these different mini comics, all these different, you know, 4-page backup features for Ninja High School or whatever, progressively took on more and more challenges until now I'm at this particular, and then after this will be a tougher challenge, right? Bigger gamble. I like that. That's a good way of putting it. So it's not about like, well, wait until you're as ready as I am, son, to do what I'm doing right now. God.
That's another way to, you're off in the weeds. If that's your message, you're running off with that one. Whoops, come back. or put that down, put it down.
Get that out of your mouth. Get it out of your mouth.
Because it's not about trying to say that there's this threshold that is defined by someone else at all. I mean, you define that threshold. There you go.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and there's, you just teach for a little while and you'll come up against that real fast. When I watch these 15-year-olds who I'm teaching now, and there's some of these girls in my classes who are leagues ahead of where I was, even at 19, and they're doing this when they're 15. And I was like, Jesus, you know, you're done. I don't have anything to teach anymore. You're already well on your way and you've got the gumption. You've got the drive. You're blogging and you're 15 years old and you're blogging about your process. Pfft, forget it. You don't need me except to say good job every once in a while, you know?
Awesome. Wow.
No, it is great. And it's, I wish I could document more of that stuff because that is proof positive that everybody's got a different, you know, introductory approach to it, right? This kid, you know, she's got her own particular, you know, weaknesses and strengths, but in an overall sense, she's well farther along than where I was at that age. Therefore, you know, she's ready to take on bigger challenges at an earlier age.
Mm-hmm.
So,
anyway. And it's never too late.
And it is never too late. No, I love teaching adult classes. Nothing makes me happier, or few things make me happier, than when somebody over the age of 40 walks into my classroom, never drawn before, and says, but I want to. You know, and I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be great. Now all I have to do is convince you that you don't have to draw very well. and man, this one woman, she's a little bit younger than me, in her 30s, never drew before in her life. After taking my class, I finally convinced her just to draw as well as she could, and she put together a self-published collection of the story of her sister's pregnancy.
That is super cool.
And she had to show it to me. You know, that was one of those moments where, like, you know, okay, I get to feel like an old teacher now, because, like, here's the student who's really proud of the thing they did, and they really want me to say that I'm happy that they did it.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay.
Shared victory. That rocks.
Yeah, that's really cool. So, yeah, it is never too late. Anyway, I hope this talk wasn't just pure self-indulgence and was actually useful to somebody. At the very least, Rob, I hope it was entertaining for you.
Definitely. I'll show up again.
Oh, thanks. Good. Good to know. You know, it's not over yet. All right. So if anybody listening found this to be useful or helpful or interesting, or at the very least, a nice diversion in the day, a break in the day, you could give us a little bit of a pat in the back for doing so by going to leanintoart.com/workshops. And there are, get this. Okay, so you get to help us out. You get to say thank you to me and Rob, but you also get extra stuff out of doing that. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's a two-way street. I almost said baby. Oh, my God. I've been watching too much Cake Boss. We're going to do this Hoboken style, baby.
I of course, I don't know what that is.
Skip Cake Boss. I love Cake Boss, but skip that. You should be watching Man vs. Food, which is on Netflix, and it's competitive eating. I am becoming obsessed with competitive eating. We'll have to do that for one of the After Darks.
Fair enough. I have a story. Fair enough.
Oh, awesome. We'll save that for
now. Hey, in the After Darks, that is another bonus you get. So you were mentioning the workshops that we have available at leanintoart.com/workshops, which right now it's over 40 hours of a variety of different workshops that are all about making stuff. And for you people who give a crap about making stuff and being, you know, evolving in improving line technique and Brandon Dayton's class on the... Oh, what's the title?
Foundations of Dynamic Line Work by Brandon Dayton. And get this, Rob. Get this. This is going to knock your socks off. $25 mm-hmm. bucks. $25 gets you the full 45-minute class with an assignment. Crazy. It's 45 minutes. It's 3 hours of content squeezed into a 45-minute bag from Brandon Dayton of BrandonDayton.com. And the man, he's an award-winning cartoonist. He's worked for EA Games. He's done a lot of really important stuff. He knows his stuff. And you'll learn a lot about how to make lines, how lines work in comics, and how to use them more expressively. Creating compelling characters with Tyler James, $25. And it's a full-on course on how to create characters that people will give a darn about.
We mentioned Krishna's class, too, Creating Crazy Characters, right? Yep.
Creating Crazy Characters, which is 4.5 hours total, 4 sessions, soup to nuts. How to think about creating characters, how to make dynamic characters, how to make characters that look like they're moving, how to make characters that are visually interesting, how you can make characters that are identifiable from a silhouette. $100, 4.5 hours. It's basically a full semester's worth of character design course that you're getting for $100. I mean, compare that to any, even a community college. That's a bargain. Now, if you do this, if you've been...
There's one more class. I really got to mention Jersey. Oh. Seriously, Jersey Drode's class called FATAM. It is a ton of awesome content. What is it? What's like 4 hours? No,
it says here 6. Did I do 6?
Well,
hours?
That was the workshop also. So oh. For the live, yeah. Oh. So for the recorded download class, it's 4 hours it's going to get you really thinking about your word balloons. It's any kind of like sound and spoken element in your comics. It's going to get you thinking about it and leveling up no matter what application you're using. I mean, Jersey goes into high ninja detail and also introductory, like he ramps you up in Adobe Illustrator in applying these things. But what's funny is I was using those techniques in Manga Studio, actually. So it's really cool and very useful for both the theory and practice of making more out of those word balloons. What an important aspect of your comic and the sound effects. So
what a kind thing to say. But yes, yeah, I that's one of my favorite subjects in comics. It's something that I'm very I'm filled with amore when I think of how sound works in comics. And so I think it came through in the class, but So and a variety of topics. There's a ton more classes over at leanintoart.com/workshops. Some of them are as low as $25. And then, you know, that helps us, that supports us and makes us makes it possible for us to keep on making these shows, because we are paying for our own hosting. We're paying for the service we use to make the video shows. So that will help keep that running. But also what you get is you get access to the forum. And if you get access to the forum, which you get for signing up for any class, then you get some of these extra After Dark podcasts that we're doing, which is more of this, more content.
Yeah. A little more silly.
A little bit. Yeah. We just recorded our first one, and it starts with us talking about how uncomfortable we get when people say objectifying things about members of the opposite sex. and how poorly we deal with it. So yeah, that's at leanintoart.com/workshops, which we consider to be the sponsor of the show until somebody else wants to bankroll the show. So, but also we like doing these workshop things, and we hope that more people will avail themselves of them so we can do even more. We've got some neat ones coming up from Rob, and more yet, which we'll announce soon. So, I guess, is that it? Anything else?
I think that covers it, Jersey. Any other things for you to announce? I mean, I don't think we said the link of the front stuff, which is at the front.me.
Front.me and then agz.me. Mm. Good for me, good for you. And yes, go visit them today twice. I'll be updating more stuff on the front site. You can follow me on Twitter, Google Plus, and Facebook and all that stuff to find out.
Yeah, and obviously I just moved into my new house at agz.me, so you know, disclaimers abound, and it's going to change. Let's see, how did I phrase it the other day? Like a bubbling, mutating mogwai fed after midnight, I think. So
count on it. Well, good. Yeah. Good. It'll be fun to watch. So good thing we've got the Wayback Machine to chronicle the different iterations of your site, so we can go back and say, oh, that's what it looked like back in 2012.
Yeah. Archive.org's.
Archive.org. So
mighty, mighty memory.
Well, thanks, Rob. Thanks for discussing this with me. And we'll be back next week with a video episode. Until then, I've been Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com and Jersey on Twitter.
And thank you, Jersey. It's been a lot of fun. And look forward to next week. And I've been Rob Stenzinger of interactive-storyteller.com and agz.me. And Rob Stenzinger on the Twitter.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.